embarrassing. I am the sexiest vegan over 50, and I forgot to turn on. What are you gonna do? Hey, you know, it is always so wonderful to speak for any Unity Church, especially this Unity Church. And the process of coming up with what I'm going to say is this interesting dance that I do with God. I'm absolutely crazy about how the process works. And I have to say, sometimes I feel a little bit proud of, ooh, this is such a cool process. I wonder if everybody could do this or if it's just a little special thing that God and I get together and do. So how it works is that, oh, around about Thursday evening, I take myself to a cafe, and I do a little silence, and then I just say, okay, God, you're on, and just start doing some free writing and kind of figuring out, based on the topic that Britt asked for weeks before, what am I supposed to say? What is supposed to come through me? And I always trust the process. It has never failed me. And this week, you know what? It failed me. And you know why I think that is? Have you all heard the phrase, the world is too much with us? Have you felt in the last week or two that the world is just way too much with us? I mean, that stuff, all that stuff going on out there in the outer world and coming through the airways and coming on the internet and everywhere that we're getting all this information was so in my face. And so talkative and so jabbery that to think about the things of the Spirit and what I wanted to have channeled through me this morning, I was just not getting it, and I was worried. So I was talking to a lovely friend. Is she here, Beth? Is Beth here? Hey, Beth. Oh, down in front. Now, Beth is not part of this community, lovely, beautiful, spiritual, amazing woman. And I said, I don't know what I'm supposed to say. And she said, well, Unitarians, Unity people, they're like into social justice and stuff. Why don't you talk about that? And I said, well, you know, Unitarians are different. Unity is more about behind the scenes. What are we going to do on that spiritual level? What are we going to do at, maybe if you're a Deepak Chopra fan, you might call it, at the level of the quantum field to live in the world as it is, make changes, and yet not just run out into some kind of fray and do something silly. And I think that's what Charles Fillmore was talking about in his wonderful writings from the last century, his wonderful partner in life, Myrtle Fillmore, who founded Unity with him. And after that conversation with Beth, thank you, it did start to come clear to me that the topic that I'd given to Britt, which was primitive unity, actually was really good for a day like this. We hear the phrase primitive Christianity. When people study religion in school, as I did, primitive Christianity is the term that they use for what early Christians believed and did way back in the first 2 centuries after Christ. Very different. You know, there were all kinds of sects and different kinds of beliefs. Things appeared to be quite a bit more mystical, not at all as structured as what we think of as the church that exists today. And I thought, I got some primitive unity as a little girl. Because as was said, I grew up in Kansas City, but my parents did this really, really silly thing that I'm sure they regretted later. They both worked. I don't think they regretted that. But at that time, there was no daycare. And if you had a little child, as they did, then you needed somebody to come in and be the nanny. So they hired this woman. And I'm sure that when they interviewed her, they asked her about experience with work, experience with children. They never said, do you belong to any subversive organizations? Well, she had been in Unity at that time for 30 years. Charles Fillmore was her minister. She went way back. She knew Myrtle Fillmore. So I am this innocent little child, supposed to be raised Roman Catholic, and yet I'm really being brought up on all these very different kinds of ideas. And in fact, all this news that we were inhaling in the past week reminded me of some of that. If you'll recall, last week, a phrase entered into the lexicon with all the power and force we have not seen in the world of words since wardrobe malfunction. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story from my childhood, and you tell me what phrase I'm talking about. Now, when I was a kid and I'd be really sick, oh, I'd be in bed with a cold, I'd be feeling totally miserable, and Dee Dee, this lovely Unity woman who was always there for me, would say, "You are a whole and perfect child of God who does not know illness." And I'm thinking, that's how you see it. And sometimes when I had not gotten the luck of the draw that year and I had the really mean teacher, and back in those days, some teachers were really mean and they could do it. And Dee Dee would say to me, "Let's hold Miss Watkins in the light. Let's know that the power of the Holy Spirit flowing through her causes her to love her job and love her children and get only joy and delight in imparting wisdom." And I'm thinking, I still wish it was next year. So when all this stuff was happening out there in the world and I'm hearing all these phrases in the news, I thought, you know what? It is a little funny. I grew up on alternative facts. Of course, Dee Dee didn't call them alternative facts. She said the facts are what they are. You have to deal with them. "I am a member of," she would say, "Unity Society of Practical Christianity. If it doesn't work in the practical world, then it just doesn't work." So you deal with the facts, but you know the truth, the capital T truth. And all those things she was telling me, that I really was a child of God, that I was created to be well, that I was created to go out there in the world and be able to hold Miss Watkins in the light and understand that whatever she said or did that was scary to me, I didn't have to be afraid because I had the truth on my side. So I did get a little chuckle over alternative facts. And I thought, you know what I want to talk about today? I want to talk about primitive unity, but I want to talk about it in a way that translates into today. People now, all over the world, are more than ever realizing that the well-being of this planet rests with its inhabitants. Now, that's not my sentence. Somebody else said that. Who do we think said that? Was it somebody in the last week? Was it Cory Booker? Who do we think said that? It was Charles Fillmore in the 1940s. The nuclear age had come upon the world. He was an old man at that time. I don't have the exact date for the quotation, so he would have been late 80s, early 90s. And when he wrote that the well-being of this world depends upon all of us, he was saying we really can't wait for some great person to pop up somewhere and fix everything. We can't expect Jesus to show up as people have been waiting for 2,000 years. Guess who it is? It's us. Now, when you hear a phrase like that, it sounds like a call to arms, a call to action. So why, when my friend said, "Well, yeah, you know, aren't you guys into like social justice and stuff like that?" I had to say, kinda, sorta. Meaning that Unity students, Friends of Unity, totally free to express ourselves in any way and every way that our conscience says to do. So if we are supposed to go out and carry a sign, if we are supposed to write a letter, if we are supposed to take a stand, we are absolutely free to do that. But you don't see a lot of organized activism under the banner of unity. So what do we do right now? Is that a cop-out? Is that something we should say, no, 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 not right? Well, I'm going to explain to you a few of the things that I learned as a small child that I think of today as primitive unity, very simple, very practical. And I think there's a way that we can apply each one of these principles to what's going on right now, as well as to anything happening in our personal life. So the first one that I want to talk about is the silence. That's what unity uses for meditation. The idea is that everything rises from the silence, from this quiet of which there is so little these days. That's where the divine ideas well up. And that's how God communicates with us. That's where inspiration and creativity and ahas and eurekas come from. So we really need more than ever before to shut out some of the din from the outside and have time every single day in silence. And the noisier the world gets, the scarier silence appears. Oh my gosh, I've never been on hold on the phone without somebody playing some music that I didn't really like, but at least there was something there. You can't walk into ye old bar and grill without having TVs coming from every corner, playing different kinds of stations. How did this happen? How did we ever get 16-lane brains that were supposed to keep up with all this stuff? But that's what's happening out there. But in here, we're no different from people 2,000 years ago. In here, the way it works is when we're quiet, when we connect, when we take 20 minutes in the morning, sounds like a big commitment sometimes, but think about what we're doing with the rest of the time. When you go into the silence, amazing things happen. Would you ever, ever go to bed at night and not plug in your electronic devices? Never! Because then you'd wake up in the morning and you couldn't do anything. And yet, if we wake up in the morning and we don't plug in ourselves to this higher power, to the source of all knowledge, wisdom, love, then we're going to go out into the world as if it was winter and we left our coat at home. We're just not going to have that protection. We're not going to have that edge. So silence is something that I was taught a long time ago in unity. And how I see that acting today is in the silence, I get the strength and I get the wisdom to go out into the din. If I just go out without that check-in, heaven knows what I'm going to do. You know what I'm probably going to do? I'm probably going to go on Facebook and say something nasty. Don't want to do that. I mean, some people do that, don't they? Don't want to do that. So we go within and we connect to God. And then we go out into the world, in the words of Ernest Wilson, who was another protege of Charles Fillmore. He'd always say, go first to God and then to man as God directs. So connect and then go do whatever you're moved to do. So silence was something that Dee Dee taught me. Another thing that she taught me that we don't talk about very much anymore, but it was big in those early days of unity, and Charles Fillmore believed this with all his heart, and that is the theory, and we know it's a theory, of reincarnation. Now, do I know this for absolute fact, the way I know that 2 and 2 is 4 and that M. Night Shyamalan peaked with Sixth Sense? No. But it was something that was taught in early Christianity. Did you all know that? In the first 500 years of the Christian church, Christians, like most other people in the world at that time and actually at this time, believed, accepted as fact that we did come here more than once. And that makes sense out of a whole lot of things. So when the biblical literalists say things like, you must believe everything in the Bible just as it's written, and then we see Jesus saying, you must be born again, and they say, no, 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 not like that. He didn't mean born. Well, I don't know. It says born. It's very interesting how the Fillmores came up with reincarnation. Charles Fillmore, who actually was part Cherokee, did you all know this? His father was an attorney and a Native American activist way back in the early and mid-1800s. Charles was born on an Indian reservation in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Very, very interesting background, but not raised probably with reincarnation. But in his going into the silence very deeply, because he was a mystic. I love mystics. Do you know what a mystic is? A mystic is someone who has had direct experience of truth. These people come out of these experiences and they say that they know that they are part of absolutely all and everything. They know that in one way they're dust and in another way that they're divine. What a thing to know. When I was a teenager, I had a Beatles fan club pen pal, and she said to me once, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And I said, "I want to be a mystic." And she was a very practical, sophisticated young woman from the D.C. area, and she wrote back to me and said, "Why don't you just be a progressive lady theologian? You could at least study that in college." Well, I did study that in college, but I still want to be a mystic. Well, Charles Fillmore did have a series of these experiences, and that was where it came to him that reincarnation was the way, in his view, that things worked. Now, this belief was solidified in 1893 when he and Myrtle Fillmore went to Chicago for the World Congress of Religions. This was the first time that people from most religions all over the world got together in one place. And someone who was there was a very charismatic young man named Swami Vivekananda. Now, Vivekananda was the first Indian yogi to come to this country from far away, and he was quite the to-do. He was really the sort of darling of high society women in several cities. He was very different and exotic. But he and Charles and Myrtle hit it off famously. And on subsequent trips, Swami Vivekananda actually visited Kansas City and helped Charles and Myrtle when they were designing Unity Village. You've all seen the tower, the water tower at Unity Village. It was Vivekananda who said, "Oh, you have it planned to be at exactly the right height for deep meditation," when someone is up on the top. So with knowing Vivekananda and learning some of these Eastern teachings where reincarnation is just in the air and the water, that came into unity. So what does that have to do with today? If one were to adopt this as a working hypothesis, why? Philosophically interesting, maybe, but what does it really have to do with the here and now? What about this? How could I have any kind of dislike, disrespect, prejudice for any group of people on this planet when it's pretty clear to me that I probably was a member of that group? And if I haven't been yet, then I'm probably going to be. Doesn't that change things? I love it. More ideas, more to ponder. Now, another idea of unity is prosperity. And this is your prosperity year, 2017. How exciting that is. But I think the prosperity message has been totally misconstrued in recent years. Because there are a lot of people, not necessarily in unity, but in the kind of new age world that we've sort of been brought into, that have the idea that prosperity means great wealth. And that if you're not succeeding at everything all the time, if you're not really, really wealthy, you're doing something wrong. It reminds me of a woman that I knew here in New York some years ago who really was very, very wealthy. And she said to me once, "It's so terrible how they treat you when they know you're not a billionaire." And I said, "You know, Linda, that happens to me all the time." Yeah. Charles Fillmore is famously quoted for saying that it's a sin to be poor. But when you look at the way that he lived and the way that Myrtle lived, I think we see that in a very different light than we do in this era of have more, do more, be more, charge more so that you can have more and have it look like you're bigger than you really are. That's not how they lived. They lived very simply. Myrtle Fillmore wrote at one time that someone who was a real businesswoman would never work for what she worked because she and Charles paid themselves the same salary that everybody else was paid working for Unity back when Unity was very small. And they did it with joy and with the expectation that they would be taken care of. For what purpose? So that they could pass it along and give it away. That same woman, the woman who was so rich that she wasn't quite a billionaire and that bothered her, said to me once, "You do not know joy until you're able to give money away." Well, we can all know some of that joy because we can all give some away. So what is exciting about that right now today? When we're worried, it's like, oh my gosh, things in the outer world are so upsetting. How do we know how to plan? How do we know how to structure our finances and do all of these responsible things? Because we just don't know. Well, here's what we know. We know that God is our source. And we know that out here in this world, things go up and down, just like night and day and right and left, and what looks like good and what looks like bad. But what we can know is that God is our source and God is our center and God does provide. And how can we help that to happen? We can be part of the flow. The Fillmores brought tithing into Unity very early on because it works. Tithing is giving 10% of what comes to you to what you believe in, to God's work in the world. God can do a lot of things, but he can't write a check. And so when you get into that flow, things are different. You're lifted above the fray. Doesn't necessarily mean you're lifted to the private plane level, but it means you're above the fray. Why? So that you can do what you came here to do. Because your soul has a purpose. You have an assignment. You need enough health, enough prosperity, enough friends, enough love, enough support to do that joyfully and optimally. That's abundance, and that's what we're promised. Now, something else that I learned about the Fillmores and about primitive Unity was not eating meat. Woohoo! That's not one we hear a lot. The Fillmores were ardent vegetarians. It's very interesting. They used to have a vegetarian column in Weekly Unity every week. Their son, Royal, was vice president of the International Vegetarian Union. They just didn't kind of sort of do this. They really did it. Now, why did they do it? Part of it, I think, they had the influence from Swami Vivekananda, from some of the Eastern teachings. But again, as Fillmore went into his mystical states, his states of cosmic consciousness, it came to him that we're creating this spiritual body as we live and breathe and eat. And when we take into ourselves, Fillmore said, the pain, the chemicals of pain and suffering and fear that that animal went through at the time of slaughter, we're taking that into ourselves. Now we're saying all our affirmations and we're trying to think positively, and yet we're ingesting pain and fear. So why would we think that we were going to experience anything other than that? We're going to talk about some of this afternoon at my workshop at St. Michael's at 2 o'clock. I hope that many of you can come. It would be really fun to have you there. But when I think about this practice of the Fillmores, this teaching of early Unity, and what it has to do with right now today, to me, it has to do an awful lot with the climate. Is anybody concerned about climate change? Y'all kind of have that in your mind. And we know that right now, coming from the top in this country, we're probably not going to be getting a whole lot of help on that particular issue. But you know what we can do? We're seeing all kinds of signs all over that say resist. Well, that's not such a Unity word, because that means we're fighting against something. In Unity, you know, we're told, as Charles Fillmore said, you need to focus on what you want to demonstrate and not on what you want freedom from. So rather than, okay, I'm going to resist what I don't like, it's more of I am going to allow, I am going to envision, I am going to create what I do see as God's will for me and for this world. So what we can do right now about climate change is simply stop eating animals. Because a lot of people don't know this. Did you know that according to the UN, according to a World Bank study, according to the best science out there, animal agriculture is responsible for more greenhouse gases than all transportation combined? Who knew that? Some of you know that. Well, now you all know that. Isn't it terrible to know things? Because before we know something, we're not responsible. And then, you know, they bring in some woman from 116th Street and she tells you something. Now then, of course, you want to research. You don't want to take anything face value that anybody says. But when you do your own research and you find out that this is the way it is, then you get to make a decision about what you want to support with the money that you spend on food. You know, we talk about tithing and putting our money into things that we want to see more of. Well, in a way, we're doing something very similar every time we spend. What we're doing is investing in the kind of world we want to see. So, anybody that chooses to cut back substantially on the animal stuff or go all the way, come to the workshop, learn how to be vegan. It's really fun. It's really fun. I've done it for 33 years, and I'm not dead yet. In fact, quite alive. So I love the idea that something that was taught way back when. Do you know this Unity movement was started in 1889? It was a publishing company then. They called it Modern Thought. And it was called Unity in 1914. This is historic. This is long ago stuff. And yet the teachings work for right now, for today. So, the next thing, unity, the word. It's the same word that yoga is, really. Yoga means union, God, person. Unity, Charles Fillmore said, unity with God, unity with man. We'll forgive him for not saying human, because that was before people were thinking in these ways. So in unity, that means embrace. Embrace of everybody and all that is. That is allowing people to be who they are and where they are, and certainly allowing for the existence of all kinds of ways for people to get back to God. And that's why we've got all these religions. Which one's right? All of them. Which one should we be mad at? None of them. Which ones should we learn more about? Oh, every single one, because they're absolutely fascinating. Einstein said, I want to know God's thoughts. Well, so do I. And if somebody in Buddhism or somebody in Islam happens to know one of God's thoughts that I haven't heard yet, I want to know that person. Because I want to know God's thoughts, don't you? So we in this room and in this wonderful city, we understand embrace in a way that a lot of people don't. There are a lot of people who are afraid. Differentness is scary to them. And we just need to stand up and say, well, we're not afraid of you. It's okay if you're afraid of me, but I want to embrace. Now, as a little girl back in Kansas City, when I was going to the Catholic school and catechism classes and things, it was a very different Catholic church than we have today. There's so much that's so good about the Catholic Church today. I still sometimes go to Mass. Does anybody do that? You got any more ex-Catholics? Yeah, I know. You can raise your hand. It's all right. We love you anyway. I mean, I go in there. And I do that holy water thing, and oh my gosh, it feels holy to me. And I light a candle. I don't like the ones where you flick the little light bulb on. That doesn't quite do the same thing. But there is power in there. There's beauty. There's grace. And this current Pope, what a cool guy. As we're counting the cool guys on the planet, yeah, yay Francis. But when I was a little girl back in the 1950s, I was getting these messages, this is the only good church, if anybody that doesn't go here is never going to see God, and they're going to have a very toasty eternity. So that's coming in one ear, and then Dee Dee, this interesting Unity woman, has taken me to this other strange place over on the Country Club Plaza in Kansas City, and I'm hearing all the religions are going to the same place. And that message stuck. That message stuck. And you know what? People of no religion are going to the same place because we're on this journey. Do we understand it all? Of course not. Have we had inklings and glimmerings from people who have touched truth? We have. And can we touch the truth ourselves? We can. Jesus said, "All that I do, you can do, and greater things." That's very discouraging. If you think, I can't raise anybody from the dead, I can't even turn Perrier into Mogan David. But, you know, maybe we've got more lifetimes to learn. So what about this unity right now today? Have we ever needed it more? Have we ever needed more to be able to reach out to people who are being ostracized? And this is a much, much harder job, I think, for us in Unity, for us in New York, to reach out to the people who want to ostracize them. That's tough. But somebody has to do it. The well-being of this world rests with its inhabitants. Thank you, Charles Fillmore. I would rather have heard that it rests with a good pope. No, it's us. It's all of us. So, what are we going to do? How many of you spent more than 1 hour of each day of this past week thinking about a one-time reality TV star? 12-step people, raise your hands. You've got that rigorous honesty thing going on. Okay, that's a lot of thought time. Now, certainly we need to be informed about what's going on in the world, absolutely, but I have a challenge that I'd like to leave with you this Sunday morning. And that is, what if for every period of time that you spend invested in learning about what's going on in the world, responding to what's going on in the world, worrying about what's going on in the world, you spend an equal amount of time in spiritual pursuit. So let's say for every 30 minutes of CNN, 30 minutes of meditation. For every hour with the New York Times, you spend an hour doing something good for somebody. It's not very hard to find somebody who needs some help. And for every 20 minutes spent worrying, time and a half. 30 minutes in prayer or reading something uplifting. Who would like to do that for this week ahead? Yay, you're first. Woo, I like people who are big on the pickup. Okay, well, let's just see how it goes. Let's just see how it goes if we continue to consume what we need to consume to be good citizens and make the choices we need to make, because as Dee Dee told me as a little child, the facts are there, you've got to deal with them. But what if we counterbalance that with going within, with reading something uplifting, with doing some action out in the world that we know really helps, like walking dogs at the shelter, because they won't argue with you, and they'll love you no matter what. Let's see what we can do in the week ahead to change ourselves and to change the world. I guess it's up to us. And you know what? That gives me a whole lot of confidence. Thank you. Thank you.
As we rest in our seats, allow the chair to support you. And if you choose to, take a breath and let it out and take another breath. And as you let it out, allow your shoulders to relax, your face, your neck, and move down through your chest and your hips, your legs. Free your lats if you're able to, and allow your feet to be flat on the floor. And as we give ourselves the gift of going within, we call to mind today's affirmation on healing, which is, I live from the truth of my being. I live from the truth of my being. Know that within yourself. I will know it one more time, and you're welcome to quietly know it with me. I live from the truth of my being. And the second sentence of today's affirmation says, I am whole, strong, and well. I am whole, strong, and well. Know that with me. I am whole, strong, and well. Know it one more time silently. And as we take this affirmation in, and as we reflect on what we've heard this morning, we know in the truth of our being that each of us, created in the image and likeness of our Creator, is wired for wholeness, for health, and for strength. Whatever we may feel in this now moment, there's discomfort, concern, in mind, body, and or spirit. The truth is that we have been created out of love, imagined into being, and that we have been birthed with all that is required to move forward and live and create our best life. The truth is that each of us is whole already. Each of us is a perfect creation already. Nothing missing for the mission we have been created to live out. Whatever the divine purpose of our creation, each of us uniquely is fully equipped to carry out that mission, that purpose. When we affirm wholeness, we are laying claim, we are grabbing hold of truth. When we affirm faith, we are laying hold of claiming our truth. We are knowing it in spirit. And through our prayer and meditation and our teachings and our practicing of principle, we bring this into being in our physical universe. Whatever it is that each of us feels we require in this now moment to live fully, to live an abundant life, to live a joy-filled life, to live a prosperous life, already is. And through the power and presence, that indwelling Christ, it is through this that we can do all things. So as we rest in the silence for a moment, let us know that despite any outer appearance, of lack or limitation, it does not change the truth that we have all we require, that we have access to unlimited good, unlimited, unfailing substance is ours. As we move into the silence, allow that knowing to embrace your very being and to love us into this truth. In the silence, knowing I am whole, I am strong, and I am well. Take a breath. And feel the energy of life move through your being from head to toe. Know that your heart's desires are yours for the asking, for the claiming, for seeing it rightly through the eyes of spirit, for knowing that our Creator will withhold from us no good thing, that we are enough, that we are worthy. As creations of divine love, we know, as we live from the truth of our being, that all things are working together for our good. All things are working together for our good. You feel the gratitude of this knowing, and we claim it as so, and we seal it in the name and in the nature of all that is good, right, perfect, through the indwelling Christ of our being. We say thank you, sweet spirit. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. And so it is.